This meeting of the House Transportation Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:06 p.m. on Tuesday, March 10th in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representatives G. Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Representative St. Clair, Co-Chair Representative Carrick, and myself, Co-Chair Rep. Eichheid. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you for that. Before we begin, I would like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records, as well as Jude Augustine from the Juno LIO for staffing the meeting today. Our committee aides are Meredith Trainer and staffer Griffin Sakale. Thank you for all the hard work you do in service of this committee. On today's agenda, we have a presentation from the Alaska Railroad and introduction of HJR 42 Northern Continental Corridor. We do have three invited testifiers joining us today for HJR 42. We'll begin today with a presentation from the Alaska Railroad. Mr. O'Leary and Ms. Clemens, please approach the dais, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. And we are happy that you are here. And then our typical process is, as you go through the slides, we do take questions from committee members unless we need to move along. But we just have two items on the agenda today, so please go ahead.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and you're happy to have us, and we are very happy to be here, actually. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to come down and address this committee. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Railroad.
And I'm Megan Clement, the external affairs director for the Alaska Railroad.
So we have an agenda of the presentation in front of you here, and certainly I assume it will also be more of a free-flowing discussion at some points of it here, which we welcome. But I really want to just give it an overview. Many of you have heard some of this before, but there's definitely some new pieces to it, just as things have progressed over time here. But we're going to put a special focus on, of course, the Alaska LNG project towards the end. So I'm going to begin and hand it off to Megan here in a couple slides. But I'd like to start with just giving kind of just a little overview of the structure of the Alaska Railroad. And really, from our perspective, and I think many other perspectives, this was really an ingenious model that was put together by the legislature in the early to mid-1980s. And, of course, the railroad was completed by the federal government from a number of failed railroads back in the 1920s time frame, and then owned by the feds until 1985, where it, in really a complete state of disrepair and some level of disarray, was actually sold to the state of Alaska. And the legislature at the time set this up as a corporation, a public corporation of the state, but a corporation really like no other in the state. And I think it's that model that has been, from our perspective, highly successful and is really, to a large degree, the reason for some of the successes I think the corporation has enjoyed. So, mandated to operate as a self-sustaining entity. And by that, it effectively means we need to make a profit. We are set up to, as I like to say, look, smell, taste, and feel like private enterprise to a large degree. But that profit that we have to make then is all of that is taken and plowed right back into the infrastructure. And as we'll talk about a little bit later on, for Alaska, it is a relatively massive infrastructure. And that profit, those dollars that get put back in, the railroad's net earnings that get put back into the organization really are what is preventing this organization from becoming, as we sometimes like to say, a ward of the general fund and actually having to come to the legislature for operating and capital funds. You'll see up there, certainly we are excluded from the Executive Budget Act, have been since transfer from the federal government. And again, that is just part of the recognition that we need to run like a business. We need to be nimble and we need to be able to move quickly. And sometimes that can be problematic under some of the structures that the Budget Act requires. We are a separate, distinct, independent corporation for legal and financial matters. And again, foreshadowing one of my favorite Shakespearean tools here. We'll be talking a little bit about that later on. But the obligations of the Alaska Railroad are the railroad's obligations. They cannot, by statute, become obligations of the state. We are not state employees. We are corporate employees. We have a separate benefit program, separate pay structure, all of that. We do have significant ties, however, to the state. And recognition of that is, our seven-member board of directors is appointed by the governor. And key actions, whether it's divesting ourselves of a full interest in a piece of land or if we want to issue bonds, as an example, do require legislative approval, legislative authorization. And we also do a number of different reports and disclosures to the state and to the legislature. Our books are kept, as I mentioned, more similar to private enterprise than they are to governmental entities. But and again, just recognition of the fact that that's how we are charged with operating. Our mission, as we'll talk about here in a moment, is to provide safe, economical, profitable, and development-oriented transportation services to the state of Alaska. So finish out this slide really by saying that it's a unique organization. It's an organization that I think, because of its uniqueness, has been successful over the last 40 years since transfer from the state.
I had a question about your board. So what are the length of terms on the board? How long do they run?
Through Chair or co-chair Eichheit, they're 5-year terms and can be certainly reappointed at that particular point.
Yeah, I assume they're staggered. I'm sure they're staggered terms.
They are.
And the current board members, have they all been appointed by the governor, the current governor, Dunleavy?
Through or Chair Eichheit. They would be, of course, given that 5-year terms here. So they have all been either appointed or reappointed by the current governor. Yeah,
thank you. Co-Chair Carrick.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, and especially with the weather. I know it was tough to get to Juneau today. I was just hoping to have a follow-up later of the statute references of where the key actions specified in statute that require legislative approval, if you could provide the committee with the relevant statutes for different bond issuance or other things.
Certainly, Co-Chair Carrick, we can do that. We are in AS 4240 is our enabling statute, and it's all within that, so we'll get you the specific references. Moving ahead, mission statement, and lots of words on this page, and they actually all are very important, but it can really be boiled down to, as I mentioned earlier, safety, service, and profitability is really to encapsulates our mission and what we do for the state of Alaska.
Yeah, Representative McCabe had a question.
The first one. Here we go. Welcome to the table, Mr. O'Leary and Ms. Clemens. So I do have a question. The Alaska Railroad, slide, you frequently state that you're supporting economic development for Alaska, that it's central to your mission. So looking at the last 10 years, what's the single largest economic development project that the railroad has actually helped bring online that increased freight movement in your system? Sort of always kind of look back and see what the railroad has done. And so what projects have you supported through freight movement?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I mean, first blush, the one that immediately comes to mind is work we did with a good customer, Petrostar, moving fuel from, we used to move, of course, an amazing amount of refined product from north to south when the Flint Hills refinery was still in place. And with that change and the lack of refining in the interior, there was a much of the fuel was coming either being imported or coming from South Central Alaska. So to get that fuel to the interior, and actually at least as important, up to the tremendous appetite of the North Slope, we partnered, worked together with PetroStar, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation subsidiary, to put together a program to put in tankage on our property in Fairbanks, and then really allowed them then to move significant, significantly increase their volumes moving forward. That's the initial thing that comes to my mind.
Follow up?
Thanks. Yeah, so I looked through my homework, and freight is historically been your largest source of rail revenue, essentially. And yet it's been pretty flat. It's largely been completely flat. So why haven't we been able to significantly grow freight traffic? And other than the LNG project, which I'm hopeful is largely on the railroad, at least to Fairbanks, what specific industries or customers would you expect that would increase freight volumes in the near future?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So I think the flat freight, and it has bobbed up and down to some degree, especially related to some of our gravel haul. We have seen a significant uptick over the past 5 years in our what we call our interline business, which relates to bringing up products from the lower 48 through a barge operation that we operate in conjunction with one of the Linden companies. And that has been very successful in supporting North Slope between everything from pipe to chemicals, drilling muds, things of that nature out there. At the end of the day, the railroad is a transportation mode. We can certainly make things, make it easier on customers. We can certainly help to move the needle for them making investments up there, but we are not what I would characterize as market makers either on this. So I think some of the flat, to the extent that it has been flat, is more reflective of the Alaskan economy to some degree. I think you've seen the uptick in North Slope activity, and that has corresponded to a significant uptick for us on our freight hauls, both on our barge service and on our kind of mainline Anchorage to Fairbanks freight hauls.
Just for our members' awareness, freight will be discussed on slide 10, I think. So.
Yeah, I'm thanks. I think we'll just let it rest there for a minute. Yeah.
Okay.
I do have many more questions on slide 10.
Okay. See no further questions at the moment. Please proceed.
Okay. All right. Slide 5 is just really some of our operating data. And again, it just sort of overlays the map. I think is interesting in that it certainly shows our railroad route, coming in Tidewater at Seward and finishing up outside of Fairbanks up in the interior. But what isn't quite as easily reflected here is just sort of the multimodal approach that we take that we are a key part of the systems in Alaska to transport goods, serve our goods and people here. We have 700 miles of track out there. You see some of the stats up there, over 1,000 freight cars, number of passenger cars and locomotives. We own docks in both Seward and Whittier. And one of the more unique aspects of the railroad is when the at transfer from the federal government, as well as the rolling stock, as well as the right-of-way, as well as the track infrastructure, we were also sold, or the state purchased the 36,000 acres of land that the Federal Railroad had. Now, give or take, half of that is used in direct operations of the railroad, either through right-of-way or in our terminals or the like. And the other half is available for other uses. And the other uses oftentimes include used by private sector or other governmental entities, that we provide that land available for lease and or permit. And, you know, my old line of double green stamps, if it does happen to include also being involved with rail transportation. So it is something that that land, as you'll see in when we get into the financials area for of this presentation, is absolutely key to the railroad's continued success. It is a very consistent revenue source for us, and as a result, has a tendency to kind of buffer the vagaries of the freight and passenger markets, which do have a tendency to change around. We move approximately just shy of 4 million tons of freight in 2025, which was actually up about 300,000 tons of freight from the previous year. And we have remained relatively consistent over the last few years at movements of roughly 500,000 passengers. For Alaska, we are, I would characterize us as a large employer, ranging between 700 and about 850 employees, depending on the time of the year. Not surprisingly, we swell up during the summer months as we run significantly more passenger and freight activity, as well as conduct a lot of our maintenance and construction activities at the time. Not surprisingly, because we're a railroad, we are a heavily unionized workforce, give or take two-thirds or a little greater than that is a member of one of the five unions actually on the property here.
And then, just for the record, Representative Stutes joined us at 1:20 p.m. I know she was in another meeting, so thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And then I had a question about this reserve land. Is it clustered somewhere? I mean, is it where would I find the largest concentrations of this reserve land if you had it there on the map?
Co-Chair Eichheit, so it really is, I mean, all along the rail belt, all along the rail line is what it is. We have significant holdings in Seward, in Whittier, in the Healy area. We have a significant amount up in the Hurricane Gulch area and certainly in the Fairbanks area.
Ship Creek.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, there's Anchorage where we have Ship Creek. And really the vast majority of the port area down there.
Okay. Representative McCabe?
Yeah, so I actually have a couple that you just triggered me on something. So
we're a team.
Yeah, the Healy thing, the Healy area, the airport in Healy is actually on railroad land. I think I brought this up maybe a couple weeks ago. I'd like to explore. That runway is in dire need of repair. I mean, it's got weeds growing up through the cracks, and it's horrible. And there's now at least one air taxi that's using it to fly into on the other side of sort of, I'm not supposed to call it Glitter Gulch apparently anymore. I don't know what they call it, something Canyon, Denali Canyon. Anyways, so I got in trouble for that. So on the other side of that, because so that's where the big fog bank lies, right? So when you're coming from Talkeetna Air Taxi to tour the mountain, oftentimes they can't make it in. But they could go up to Healy, and they can come from the other side of the mountain. Problem is that runway is so bad right now that it's dangerous because of the weeds growing up through the pavement, which causes the pavement to. So point being, it's on your land, but it needs to be fixed. So are you going to fix that, or can we come to an agreement with the DOT? Because what I think is it might be cool to take a train up that far and then get off there and stay in Healy and do an air taxi flight and then take the train back, right? So I think maybe, and maybe you're not aware of it, but maybe it's something that needs to be addressed and take a look at.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, yes, I know we spoke about this last week, and I'd actually hoped to catch you before committee today, but good to talk about it. So, yes, the railroad has been in discussion with DOT about the Healy Airport, and I know there's been some initial discussion of potentially entertaining a land transfer, if that would be something that they'd find to be helpful. You know, that's a discussion that we're happy to enter into. They are currently undergoing a study of the Healy Airport. So they're working with an outside consultant. And what they asked was for us to put that conversation on hold until they were able to get the results of that report that would make recommendations on next steps. But we participated in that study, providing information about train guests coming into the area, you know, what we would see as potential usage for the airport. So my understanding is that report should be available, I think, even this week. So we'll be looking forward to next steps on that discussion.
Cool. I'm glad I asked. Thanks.
And through the chair, Representative McCabe, also, just to be clear, we don't do runways. It's statewide aviation, I assume, with the Department of Transportation.
Well, I don't know. It's on your land, sir. So I'm just teasing. I get it.
All right. Please proceed.
All right. Slide six is just a listing of our strategic goals. And we go through every 4 to 5 years what I would characterize as robust strategic planning exercise with our board of directors. And, you know, as to really where do we want to take the railroad, certainly not only in the next 5 years, but the longer term horizon here. And as a result of that, we completed that process in the 2024 timeframe and came out with these six strategic initiatives or objectives. Certainly all roads lead to safety, and it is, we'll talk about that in a moment here, paramount to the the railroad. Certainly stewardship and stakeholder relations, our ability to work together with our neighbors, with local governments and other stakeholders, as well as the general public, to be an excellent steward of this critical asset for Alaska. Revenues need to continue to grow. We are always looking to expand our business opportunities out there, and so we continue to work diligently towards that. But because we do have the model of working very similar to private enterprise, we have to keep a very close eye on the expenses that go along with that. So a focus on how we can continue to become more efficient, both from an operating and an administrative perspective. The all-important capital investment, the amount of investment that is required to keep this infrastructure healthy is daunting, especially with this much track with during the summer months, extraordinarily high density or very high density on the rail lines. But during the winter months, certainly we have significant capacity out there. So it is important that we identify the capital that needs to be, that we need to invest in, and then to execute that very wisely. And then certainly, number six, to continue to look at opportunities to grow both rail and real estate development through everything from extensions to rail extensions to real estate, enhancing real estate developments and the like. But these are the strategic goals that management and the board agreed to in 2024.
A question I have is, looking at this, I see the outline of a business plan or strategic plan. Do you have a business plan that covers these things? It says this is how we're doing this as you look forward. Is there something like that available?
Yeah, Co-Chair Eichheit, there is. I mean, and it effectively is organized by these six, and then we have a number of sub-goals beneath those and the steps that we are going to take to achieve that. And we could certainly provide that if that was something of interest.
Yeah, I would appreciate that, sharing that with the committee. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. With these goals, when we talk about number six, you mentioned rail extensions, but really my question is with point number three, which is expanding business opportunities. Obviously, rail extensions, you know, that makes sense. And so the question is, what or how are you going to expand business opportunities, and what are some of the business opportunities that you have expanded into in the past, if that makes sense? Or what are you looking to do in the future? I guess it would just be a more relevant question. Like what extensions, how are you going to grow the business in the future?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Nelson. I mean, it's a great question, and one of the things that we task our marketing department. We have a freight marketing and a passenger marketing department, and we have our real estate department, which also handles their marketing, is to develop just that, a marketing plan as to what are they going to do for both the short term and the longer term to be able to continue to grow with not only existing customers. I mean, the old adage that the best customer to have is your existing customer, that you can then hopefully build on that, and by providing good quality service to them, can enhance their ability to expand out there, but also looking at whether and what makes sense to move into for something that necessarily we haven't been involved in before. And that certainly can take lots of different approaches, whether it's on the passenger side or on the freight side of the house. The AKLNG is certainly something that probably the biggest thing in front of us at this particular moment, and as we'll talk about a little later on here, I mean, as to how we have approached working not only with the state but with also with Glenn Farn, the developer, to not only be able to provide a model for logistics and operations out there, but we'll be able to bring some relatively unique financing opportunities to them. And it's the same on the passenger side. We are always looking, working with one of, I think, the strengths of the railroad is we have been around for as long as we have, and people have worked with us, and they generally enjoy working with us, and as a result of that are willing to come to us with ideas and initiatives about things, some of which certainly could work, some of which for lots of different reasons don't work out. So long-winded answer to it. I mean, is that responsive to your question, or
a quick follow-up?
Kind of,
yeah, and that's okay. What rail extension projects have you guys done in the past to expand those business opportunities or to expand your service to other areas of the state?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Nelson. So there have been no, what I would characterize as major rail expansions done at this point, meaning, 40 miles, or certainly Port McKenzie is the closest that we have worked on at this point, and it's significantly down the path, but it also has a significant amount to go to be finished on that. We have put rail in at the request of customers and through arrangements with customers to serve if they've got something that was not served by rail but is close to rail, so we will put a siding in or a spur in that allows them. We have replaced out rail that was underused or in rough shape, quite honestly, to be able to make businesses viable for serving them with rail, things of that nature. But we continue to work, as we'll talk about in a little bit here, on the larger rail extensions. But those are not the kind of things, they are of such a magnitude that the Alaska Railroad can't handle those on their own.
But I would add on, if I could, through the chair, Representative Nelson. While we continue to focus on rail extensions, and we'll be talking about them more in later on in the presentation, I do think that we've looked for opportunities to invest in other kinds of infrastructure that can help develop new customers using the rail infrastructure that we have already. So most notably, under construction right now, there's the Seward Passenger Dock. So that's a $137 million new facility replacing an aged out dock structure down in Seward, functionally paid for by cruise guest port usage pure improvement fees. But that'll be a great new facility to serve not only Seward but the travel industry across South Central and Interior Alaska. Shortly following on after that, we've got a lengthening of our freight dock, also down in Seward, that's going to allow for larger freight vessels to come in. As Bill already mentioned, we've seen a big uptick in pipe and frac sand coming into Seward to support North Slope development in recent years. And, it's our hope and expectation that by expanding this facility, that's also going to lead to new customers. And we also have another grant application out right now to expand the Whittier Tunnel. Whittier Tunnel, Portage Tunnel. There's two tunnels down there in the rail-only tunnel that would allow us to offer a double-stack freight service for our customers. So that's something that we've started to pilot as a service, again, for existing customers that would add greater efficiency. It's something we know they want. We think that could lead to future opportunities as well. So that's not at all to get off stage about the rail extensions. Of course, we remain focused on those as well, but we are looking for other infrastructure investments to help support new customers.
Just a awareness of the committee. We are on slide 6. We have 29, so shorter answers are better answers. Maybe not tag team. Because we do have a member's resolution that I want to get to. So once we get to 215, I'm going to be trying to move along. So anyways, see no further questions. Good. But I do like the question, just shorter answers. If we can go to the next slide.
All right. Co-Chair Eichscheid, point well taken. And I will start running through here. It's not an accident that safety is at the top of our goals. It's really woven through everything we do at the railroad. And just to highlight a few of the key areas where we think about it, first would be employee safety. Of course, we want everyone who comes to work to go home safely. It also supports safety for our customers and for the general public when our employees are doing their jobs safely and well. So we continue to be committed to our incident-free culture program that's supporting training, best practices, management buy-in so people know it's taken seriously at the railroad. One of the goals there is to foster, safer outcomes, improved productivity, and also a heightened sense of employee morale. So we'll remain committed to that program. Public safety awareness campaigns. So you'll hear us talk about the importance of ensuring that the active railway corridor is a safe place that is not open to the public. And we're lucky to have no shortage of wonderful places to hike and recreate and take photos in Alaska. The active railroad right-of-way is not one of those places, and that's purely a safety concern. Unfortunately, we do see cases where people misjudge the speed of the train, how far the train overhangs the tracks. It's a tragedy whenever one of those events occurs, not certainly just for the victim and their family, but also for the train crews involved. So it's something we take really seriously. We partner with national programs, Operation Lifesaver being one of them, as well as local PSAs, encouraging people to remember to stay off the train tracks. And then finally, another point I want to highlight is our participation in emergency response drills that we take part in, not just with our team, but with other local agencies. And there were a couple of these in the last year that I just wanted to highlight. So one was we participated in the military Special Operations Forces Arctic Medic Training back in February of this year. That was up in Fairbanks. And if it's a little hard to tell what's happening in that picture, that is a Black Hawk helicopter landing on a flat car on a bridge over the Chena River. And that was part of an emergency medical training operation. So something that we were happy to help support. I think our folks got to learn some things about safety operating in cold conditions, which is certainly an ongoing concern for us. And very cool to be able to support a military training exercise in that way. And then also, typically at least once a year, we will do a joint emergency preparedness exercise with a different community along the rail belt. So that happened in Whittier this last year with a tunnel exercise. So we involved local emergency responders from Whittier and had the chance to test the communication systems, the safe houses within the tunnel. Great experience from a training exercise, but again, also just a good opportunity to build those relationships and make sure that we're maintaining good channels of communication with those different emergency responders all along the rail belt. All right. And with that, we'll get into an overview of our business lines. So as has been noted already, our freight business is the largest business line for the Alaska Railroad. And it's ironic because I think sometimes it's the most overlooked. It happens a little behind the scenes, but the fact that we are able to provide freight services by rail across the state, I think, is an enormous benefit for Alaskans. Freight rail isn't the right solution exemption for every commodity, but if you're moving high volume, heavy goods, it's going to be the most cost effective and sustainable way to move that cargo across the state. So in doing so, we're able to drive down the cost of consumer goods that are coming from the Port of Alaska, headed up to the interior, for fuel and coal that's going up to Fairbanks and the surrounding communities and military bases. We're moving gravel for South Central construction projects and keeping the cost down on that. Already mentioned the amount of pipe and frac sand coming into the state, so helping to drive down the cost of supporting that North Slope development. And of course, locals will appreciate, we all know how limited the highway system is up here, and being able to keep thousands of trucks off the road and free up those drivers for other routes where they're needed. Our freight rail service provides a lot of benefit to Alaskans.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So we talked a little bit already about the passenger dock in Seward, and I think your passenger business is 13% of your rail revenue, and freight is 44%. So I'm curious, is freight subsidizing your passenger services, or would they be profitable on their own? In other words, if the legislature were to get a wild hair and split you off into two separate, freight and passenger, would the passenger survive, or are we subsidizing the 13% of your core competency with the 44% that you really are supposed to be doing? Sorry.
Through the chair.
Didn't mean it quite like that.
I think we are meant to be doing many things out there. And like so many other things in life, it depends on how you look at it from the perspective that it's a single track. And so how do you allocate the cost of that track to freight versus passenger? I will tell you very much that passenger has grown significantly over the years and is a significant contributor to our bottom line. So we are far better off with passenger than without passenger. I think what makes the Alaska Railroad work is the fact that you do have the three primary lines of business, freight, passenger, and real estate, working together.
And follow up. Yeah, follow up. And federal government grants, which kind of leads me, I'll ask that question later, I guess. So I that's probably good for now. Thanks.
Okay. Please proceed.
All right. This chart simply shows an overview of our freight rail by category. So you can see bulk petroleum, local coal that would be going from the Yosemite coal mine up to Fairbanks. Gravel, I mentioned, you can see that's a high volume move for us each summer. Interline would refer to that freight coming up on the rail barge or into the Port of Alaska. And then other, that would capture military moves, again, the pipe, the frac sand, kind of more incidental that doesn't fall into those larger commodities I just mentioned. All right, into passenger services. So this is probably our business line that we're best known for. We do operate year-round, regularly scheduled passenger rail service. In doing so, we partner with local and national and international tour operators, local hotels and excursion vendors. Our model is really to try to get people out across the state into destinations all along the rail line so that people are able to enjoy a safe and comfortable way to travel the many hundreds of miles across Alaska and then enjoy and spend some time and money in different places along the way there. We really see our role is to act as an ambassador for Alaska when we are, talking to out-of-state guests that might be looking for a way to travel the state. So we're not just talking about the Alaska Railroad. We're talking about why people would want to spend some time in Talkeetna or Fairbanks or Seward, what have you, the things that you can do while you're there. So we do try to be a cheerleader for some of those small businesses that may not have the reach when we're out talking about the Alaska Railroad and why to take a visit. We also help connect thousands of cruise visitors when they come into the Anchorage Airport. We do have the airport depot, and 2 to 3 times a week, we're running direct charter trains from the airport down to cruise ships in Seward or Whittier. So again, providing a seamless transition there and sparing a number of motor coaches from the highway. And, you know, one unique thing, there's a few superlatives about the Alaska Railroad. So we're actually the last railroad in the country that provides both freight and passenger services. So we're unique in that regard. We are also the last railroad in the nation that provides flag stop service. And we do this in the area north of Talkeetna, where the highway and the train tracks diverge. And locals who have cabins out there rely on the hurricane turn flag stop train to be able to access their properties off the road system. So it's a unique service that we offer that's very reflective of Alaska as a unique place to live. And again, always nice to spare some of that highway traffic, so noting that as well.
Co-chair Carey.
Thank you, through the co-chair. I think I ask this question every time I talk to both of you, but you know, it used to be, my grandma has told me stories. She used to take the train to visit friends in Anchorage from Healy on a regular basis as a teenager. Like, that used to just be the way she would get from Healy to Anchorage, which was really cool. I took the train from Fairbanks to Anchorage a couple years ago, and I think it cost somewhere, right, you could tell me. I won't say it on the record what I paid because I can't remember. But it was a few hundred dollars to travel. And it's just not an option to travel on the rail if you're not a tourist trying to get that experience out of it. It's definitely not faster than driving, and it's definitely not cheaper than driving. So what can we do to, I don't know, obtain federal subsidy to help support passenger service, or, you know, increase the tourist rates to take the train? What would help get more Alaskans utilizing the train as a mode of transportation between Fairbanks and Seward?
Co-Chair Carrick, you know, it's a great question, and I think, you know, some of the change that you would see there probably would be reflected in the change from ownership by the federal government and their model of, you know, directly subsidizing the operations of the Alaska Railroad, and the model that we have today under state ownership of being set up to essentially pay our own way and, again, act similar to private enterprise. So, you know, we're very conscious of the fact that we're owned by the state and we are here to serve Alaskans. You know, there are some restraints that we have when it comes to providing any sort of preferential pricing for Alaskans. So we'll talk a little later on about the federal funding that we receive, but some of the FTA grants that we receive that are critical to our ability to keep the track and bridges and all the capital maintenance that we need to do specifically prohibit any sort of geographically braced discount. So an Alaska resident discount under that funding model would not be something we'd be able to accommodate. In terms of, you know, a commuter rail model or, you know, something that was specifically designed to offer, you know, passenger transportation not at cost, that's something that would require a subsidy. We're not necessarily set up with our model to be able to support that. I know there's been discussions in the past with the state, if that's something that the state would be interested in funding, but that's not something that our model is especially well designed to support. So, you know, we look at our passenger services as an economic development tool. Certainly with the flag stop train, we're trying to be responsive to services that Alaskans need. You know, we're conscious of trying to have pricing that's competitive in the market with other providers, but I think that would help inform the pricing that you see.
Just a follow-up. And is there opportunity to do any kind of like giveaways or can we do it that way? So if we can't offer a different preferential rate for residents currently, can we do essentially, you know, tickets given to nonprofits at a much greater volume such that more Alaskans could utilize the train to get back and forth? I'm just trying to figure out a way that we can get back to something approximating the same reason this train is still a flagship Flagstop train mm-hmm. today, which is used to be used as, in addition to freight, a passenger service for Alaskans. And now it really, when you're on it, it feels very fun. It feels very exciting, but it also feels very touristy. And you pay the price for that tourist experience currently. So is there another way we can achieve the same goal without creating a preferential price structure?
Co-Chair Carrick, so we do have an existing charitable contribution program in place where any Alaska 501c3 can apply and will provide free tickets for fundraising purposes, or anything that, they're using the tickets to help affect their mission. So we have that program in place. We give away a large number of rail tickets through that program already. Without just sounding like I'm going to put in a plug for the Alaska Railroad open house here, it'll be in Fairbanks this fall, and we do enjoy handing out 50% off coupons to those who come out. So we look for opportunities to try to distribute some targeted discounts for folks who show up to the open house or some other local events that we have. And we do partner with some other local excursion providers, whether the hotels or Glacier Cruises, to offer some discounted rates. Those are typically on our website in the spring each year.
One more comment. Thank you through the co-chair. I just would point out that some Alaskans have discussed in the past structuring our marine highway system in a similar way to the Railroad Corporation. This is my biggest hesitation with that, is our marine highway system is a transport service for Alaskans, and it's also a great resource for tourists if they choose to use it that way. But the cost to Alaskans to utilize the rail is a huge reason why I'm hesitant to go to a corporate model for the marine highway. I don't want it to become unaffordable for Alaskans. And I just, the more we can do coupons, more coupons. And the more we can do to encourage Alaskans to affordably utilize the rail service, you're going to take even more cars and traffic off the highways, and it is a really great experience. It's really great for people who are lower income or younger people who are traveling, and I would just love to see more people using the railroad.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I have a couple questions on passenger service, actually, in your reports, and I think you said it, your passenger service has, or the number of passengers has been expanding. When a cruise line attaches its cars to you, to the railroad, do you count all those as individual passengers for your passenger count? So in other words, I could look it up, I guess, but your passenger count for this year is...
next slide, yeah.
Yeah, I've got the
52,891 for 2024, up 2,000 from 2023. Are those individual passengers you're counting that are on the cruise ship cars? You're counting them individually?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. Yes. So the roughly 500,000 number that you're seeing there. We don't have the numbers broken out here, but this would be inclusive of both passengers ticketed on the public Alaska Railroad trains as well as individual guests on the cruise line charter cars. It's typically about between a 50-50, 60-40 split between those with slightly more guests on the Alaska Railroad public trains.
Thank you. Follow-up. Yeah. So do you charge per passenger for the cruise ship cars? In other words, of the percentage that are on the cruise ship cars, are they paying the same rate to the Alaska Railroad as an Alaskan is paying to the Alaska Railroad, or are you only charging the cruise ships for hauling their cars one way or the other, and it could be empty or it could be full?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, we have pull contract agreements with the cruise lines, I think depending on the contract, there may be some headcount number where something kicks in, but generally speaking, it's predicated on kind of a flat pull contract fee With that being said, I know a number of the privately pulled rail cars will sell their excess seats that are available, for individuals to purchase tickets on as well. So those are available in the marketplace, whether an Alaskan or a visitor would be interested in purchasing a seat.
So to be clear, you're counting the passengers for the entire train, but the passengers on the cruise ship cars are not paying the same rate as Alaskans are paying to get on the Alaska Railroad. They're paying their cruise fee, whatever that is, and then the cruise ship is just paying a pull fee. Could have 100 passengers in a car, could have 10. So the cruise ship takes the risk, but I kind of object to counting them as your passengers, because they're really not. They're not Alaska Railroad passengers. Those are cruise line passengers. So I wonder if there's a breakout where of just the passengers that are on the Alaska Railroad cars and how that has climbed or declined every year, because I think it goes to Representative Carrick's question. Alaskans can't afford to ride our own railroad. And I suspect it's somewhere buried in the dynamics that we're looking at right here.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McCabe, no good deed going unpunished. This is the first presentation to this committee that we have not broken out the cruise. And so a memo to file, we will address that going forward here. So, yeah, every other year we've given you, and as Megan said, it's roughly a 60-40 split between, people in Alaska Railroad coaches versus people in, other coaches. At the end of the day, they are all riding on the Alaska Railroad, and that's what we measure it, and we measure things in lots of different ways. So and there are a number of different contracts, varied contracts with different cruise lines and tour operators as to negotiated contracts as to how we charge for passenger service for non-individual purchases.
And, I would also like to see that information broken down. And a final follow-up, if...
Yeah, thanks. It would be interesting to know if the pull charge for the cruise ship cars is equal to the number of passengers. So taking a full cruise ship car and a full Alaska Railroad car, what's the price differential? In other words, are we charging enough pullage for the railroad cars for the cruise ship cars to equal what a full Alaska Railroad car would be? In other words, are we giving them a great break by just charging them a pull fee?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, if we're giving anybody a great break, we shouldn't be.
Okay. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, through the co-chair. So to follow up on Representative McCabe's question, I would presume that on these pull car rates, it's a flat rate, full car or empty car. If you're pulling the car, it's a flat rate. Am I correct in that?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, sort of. We have many contracts. We have some that are in that mode. There, we have others that are, certain with certain minimums and based on per head.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
Please proceed.
All right, moving on into real estate. And so, as Bill already mentioned, we do manage roughly 36,000 acres of property that came over to through the federal transfer. Again, roughly half of that is used in direct operations, the other half available for lease at fair market value. It is the smallest but the most stable of our business lines, which really provides a key asset in enabling us to meet our maintenance obligations. And you'll see that in the coming slides as as we talk about our overall net income and our capital program. There's a lot going on in real estate, as we already mentioned. We've got significant reserves in just about every stop we have along the rail line. But just to pull out a few highlights, that have happened over the last year, one would be ongoing development in Ship Creek. So the Alaska Railroad has directly invested significantly in improvements for Depot Drive, which would be the road extending towards Cook Inlet, kind of just to the west of our downtown Anchorage depot. If you follow that drive along, we've paved, we've done sidewalks, some landscaping. That'll lead you down to the new 49th State Brewing Tasting Room, well worth a visit if you haven't been down. The boardroom co-working space is down there, and it's just below the downtown Edge condos. That was a 95-year lease agreement with the Alaska Railroad. It's on our property, but provided kind of an innovative way to put in some new housing in downtown Anchorage. The developers didn't have to assume the upfront cost of purchasing the land. We have a long-term lease tenant. There's now a new condo opportunity, and we're excited to celebrate the fifth and final phase of that downtown Edge project this May. And then quickly to note also the downtown trail connection, kind of just to the side of all of this new development. That is an AMATS project that is planned to commence later this year, but that will actually connect the existing coastal trail over to the Ship Creek Trail. It's about a mile extension, and the Alaska Railroad Board just approved the corridor permit for that trail to go on ARC property. We're working on finishing up a bridge replacement project right in the middle of the planned alignment, but just as soon as that is done, we're expecting work to get started on the trail connection. So lots of good stuff happening down in Ship Creek. We are also on the real estate front. Our terminal reserves and our port facilities fall under real estate and how we manage improvements to those portfolios. We've made investments in undergrounding utilities in our Seward reserve. We think that's something that's going to pay dividends for existing customers coming in there. And certainly if we do start seeing a lot of pipe coming in for the gas line project, I think that'll help with the efficiencies there. Similarly, we had the opportunity to purchase some land this last year directly adjacent to our Fairbanks terminal, which is not an opportunity that comes along very often, so took the chance to expand for some of that operating laydown space. And again, I think if we see a lot of pipe coming that way, that'll be something we're glad to have. Also, in keeping with the theme of the gas line, our board also recently approved a corridor permit for 8 Star Alaska. For the proposed alignment, there's about a 5-mile stretch up near Healy where the gas line would actually be within the Alaska Railroad right-of-way, that utility corridor, and so recently approved that permit. And then finally, just to note, as this committee is well aware, we do have House Bill 216 and Senate Bill 191 working their way through the legislature, and that would enable the Alaska Railroad to sell some defined parcels of land to the city of Whittier. So excited to see those moving forward as we continue negotiations with the city, towards a mutually beneficial transaction there.
If you just go back for a moment, I just want to mention on the Ship Creek development, I had the opportunity to take a tour there in October, and I'm really pleased to see the railroad working to improve with private partners, improve housing and recreation and business. So, Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I kind of like the fact that real estate is stabilizing and helping, because any transportation system is going to be volatile depending on usage and ridership and everything. But are we just becoming a real estate company with a small rail problem, or are we real estate is 12%, but freight is 42% of your total revenue. So do you see us going further into the real estate market, or are we pretty much stable right there with the tens of thousands of acres that we mentioned earlier?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, to answer your question, are we becoming a real estate department or a real estate company? The answer is no. With regard to the other question about, we'll continue to look for opportunities in real estate. While real estate is a small amount of our revenue, it is a very large portion of our net income because the margin on real estate is significantly higher because there are less costs that go against it than providing transportation services.
Perfect. Thanks.
And just for awareness, it's about 2:05 at 2:15. I'm going to speed up a little bit. Might stop questions till the end at 2:15. So please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Eichscheid. Quickly showing our real estate revenues, you can see that leases and permits make up the bulk of these revenues, and those are very stable over time. You've heard a lot from us over the last year with the bond authorization bill for the Seward passenger dock about that facility. Quick note there, the fluctuations that you see kind of on the right side of the chart in recent years, you know, as we've mentioned, the purchase of the new facility is funded through port improvement fees, and you're seeing those reflected in the revenues captured. So some of that revenue is pledged to the payment of the dock, but certainly some would be available to the broader you know, railroad internal funds purposes. And for an overview of our net income and revenue sources, you can see the various pieces of the pie broken out there. We've already had the chance to speak about freight, passenger, and real estate, and we'll get into grants here shortly. But you can see how our net income has fluctuated over the years and where the stability of that real estate income does help to just kind of manage some of those greater volatilities in our other business lines. And just to reiterate the point that Bill made at the start of the presentation, all of the net income achieved by the Alaska Railroad is reinvested back into the capital program.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Can you just remind me again what the I think we had this last year, but can you remind me what the decrease in 2024, the huge number was? There was some reason for that.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. Yes, that was a timing issue with a federal grant. So, yeah, that's why you're seeing the fluctuation there. So things should look a little more stable than they're reflected across the screen. All right, so into our five-year capital plan, you know, there's a lot of different metrics that you could use to measure success at the Alaska Railroad, and we do, but certainly one of the most important things we look at is how are we keeping up with our capital plan. So the budget that you're looking at here that is supported by internal funds generated by the railroad's business activities, by federal formula funds, as well as federal competitive grants, and we've got another slide getting into more details on those here shortly, but this capital plan is looking at supporting, you know, our facilities, infrastructure, and equipment that we need to be safe and reliable and support our customers. One change that you'll see in the reporting for this year is we included competitive grants that we plan to apply for or have pending grants but have not necessarily been awarded yet. So you'll see a larger number than we've had in the past, but we'll talk a little bit more about the plans for those competitive grants on the coming slides. And here we are. So federal funding, you know, we've alluded to it a few times along the way, but it really is critical for the railroad to be able to keep up with the immense amount of care and feeding that comes along with maintaining, you know, almost 700 miles of track, over 1,000 rail cars, all the facilities, equipment, everything that comes along with running a railroad across South Central and Interior Alaska. The Federal Transit Administration Formula Funds, those are the largest and most stable federal funds that we receive, and those we qualify for by virtue of, again, running year-round, regularly scheduled intercity public rail transportation. Like many types of federal dollars, these come with some guardrails on how they can be used. Most notably, we already talked about, you know, the restrictions around geographically based, you know, local resident discounts. The FTA funds are also restricted to capital improvements that benefit passenger services. Now, again, we are a single mainline track, and there's nothing to say that you can't, you know, deploy those funds in support of the mainline line that also supports freight services. And so it's a great way where our passenger services can actually help support our freight activities. But there does need to be a passenger component. So if there's a spur that is specific to freight services, those FTA funds would not necessarily be available in support of those projects. The FRA, a Federal Railroad Administration, CRISI Special Transportation Circumstances Funds, that's another smaller pot of formula funds we receive, and those don't have any restrictions. Those can be used for freight services. I mentioned pending competitive federal grants. So currently we have applications out for a $32 million grant application to repair our Hurricane Gulch Bridge. For those of you that have had the chance to take a ride over that, it's the longest, tallest bridge on the railroad system. Certainly one we do want to keep in a state of good repair. We have that MARAD PIDP grant out for the Whittier Tunnel clearance. I spoke about that. This would enable us to be able to offer double stack freight service out of Whittier, which we think is something that would benefit not just our customers, but also the community by allowing us to shorten the total length of the train. And then we have a USDOT build grant out for a secondary phase of improving our Seward freight dock. So we'll talk about this a little bit more in coming slides. And then one more grant we will also talk about later is we do have plans for a CRISI grant for the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. We'll get to that a little bit later.
A clarifying question. Mm-hmm. So the FTA grants, mm-hmm. I heard the word essentially transit in there. Mm-hmm. So I never thought of the Alaska Railroad being a commuter rail, if I would. But are these grants used for commuter rail type services down in the lower 48?
Co-chair Eichscheid, they can be used for commuter rail. They can also be used for what's called intercity passenger rail, which is what the Alaska Railroad provides, which is, again, that regularly scheduled, publicly available service that connects different cities. So, you know, longer than what you might typically associate with a commuter rail service in a different model, but we still qualify under those transit funds.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right. Briefly touching on our track rehabilitation program, because it is ongoing, never ending, and very important for us to keep our track safe and efficient. It's about a $25 million annual program. We're always aiming to replace between 40 and 50,000 ties each summer. If we can keep up with that, by the time we make it from one end of the main line to the next, it's time to start over. So we're always aiming on that target. On to our bridge program. This has been another big initiative for us. I always like to say it was a lot of fun celebrating our centennial 3 years ago, but it does also speak to the age of some of our infrastructure. So we are engaged in an ongoing initiative to replace or rehabilitate over 100 bridges on our system. It's, you know, ballpark about a $500 million program. And again, this is something that we are looking to achieve with railroad internal funds and federal dollars, but not something to burden the state budget with. It's critical to ensure the ongoing safety and viability of the Alaska Railroad. And we're also looking to enhance the service we're able to offer. So currently, we are rated to a 263,000 pound railroad. That limitation is informed mainly by our bridges. The lower 48 standard is a 286,000 pound railroad, and once we complete this bridge rehabilitation program, we'll be able to meet that lower 48 standard, which should really bring some efficiencies into that Seattle-Whittier rail barge program, where we can, again, be consistent with what can travel over the lower 48 rail network. We are certainly looking at competitive federal grants to help us achieve this program. You can see a few of those that have been recently awarded, and then also some that have been recently under construction, either completed or under construction right now. And you can see the poster right there. That's this year's annual art print, and that shows the bridge that we need to get replaced before the downtown trail connection will come in kind of just under that bridge.
And that was the that's what I saw in my tour, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, moving along to the Seward Passenger Dock. This is a project that this committee has certainly heard a lot about. So just briefly to recap, $137 million new facility, again, funded through that 30-year peer usage agreement with Royal Caribbean Group, where they've guaranteed 140,000 guests coming to Seward annually for 30 years. While Royal Caribbean is the anchor tenant, it will operate as an open dock, so we certainly welcome other brands to call on Seward. And it is a double berth pier, so we can't accommodate two ships simultaneously. It'll be a larger dock than what we've had to date, so we're excited to welcome the Quantum class of ships this summer. And we're also excited to offer our guests and the community of Seward a new, larger terminal building. So it's around 60,000 square feet total, just over 40,000 enclosed space inside. It'll be the largest building in Seward available for community events, which is something we've done for a long time with the old terminal in the winter season, and look forward to doing that more with the new building as well. Briefly, we'll touch on the $50 million shore power project that's happening in tandem with the new dock. So the Alaska Railroad partnered with the City of Seward and the Seward Company, the developer on this project. We were awarded a $45 million grant with the $5 million match met by the developer, which will fund a new battery bank system and shore power electrification for the new dock. So very excited about that. Construction is underway now. You can see the top photo there is a rendering, but the bottom photo shows construction over the winter. So that's the new dock facility going in, and we are on track for completion in May of this year. So looking forward to that new facility.
Just it's 2:15, so we'll hold questions till we get to the end.
Okay. Briefly, I already mentioned we do have a freight dock directly next door to the passenger dock. Phase one is to lengthen the freight dock, and we do have a federal grant to support that initiative. Phase two is the build grant I mentioned we have out right now. That would also widen the dock, and that would allow this facility to serve as a contingency port for the Port of Alaska for the roll-on, roll-off operations. On to rail extensions. So, you know, we've discussed a little bit already, but rail extensions remain an ongoing focus for the Alaska Railroad. We've spoken with this committee many times in the past. The scale of these projects, I mean, Port McKenzie rail extension with an estimated cost of $275 million is the smallest of these projects. You know, the remaining Northern Rail Extension and Northern Continental Corridor are in the billions. We certainly see the potential and the value in these projects, but they're simply too large for the Alaska Railroad to take on alone. So with that, we remain engaged in seeking partnerships, whether that be through federal funding opportunities, through commercial partners, looking for ways to try to advance these projects because we do see the value in them. In our 2026 capital budget, our board started a new rail expansion reserve fund with an initial allocation of $1.4 million with an ongoing commitment of 6% of our annual net income. Again, looking at the scale of the projects, the intent is not necessarily that, you know, we'd be able to afford the projects alone based on that, but that when we have opportunities for studies or initiatives to help advance these, we've got resources available to be able to capitalize on those opportunities. We are currently involved in an initiative along with the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation and the state DOT, ADA, and the Mat-Su Borough, working with a group called Alaska Infrastructure Partners that brought the state a proposal around the Port McKenzie rail extension. So working with those entities to determine if this is going to be a viable path forward. We also, as I mentioned, plan to partner with the Mat-Su Borough on a Federal Railroad Administration CRISI grant. And if that sounds familiar from what I mentioned to this committee last year, the FRA never actually issued that NOFO last year. They've rolled 2 years into what we're expecting for this year's CRISI issuance, which we're told to expect in a matter of weeks, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye out for that. The Northern Rail Extension, this would be extending from the Eielson Branch out to Fort Greeley. It's a four-phase project. Phase one has already been completed, funded through a mix of defense funds and state funds, and that's the bridge over the Tanana River. That's a project that we see as having a lot of benefit for the military, and certainly if you can complete it to Delta, a lot of opportunity for economic development, in mining regions in that area. And it's a fine segue into the Northern Continental Corridor. The Northern Rail Extension would be one component of that as you work towards the border with Canada. It would get you 80 miles closer from there. You've still got a couple hundred miles to go. The dream of connecting Alaska to Alberta is something that has been considered a lot. This railroad has put a lot of time and focus into in the past. We certainly see the potential benefits and are supportive of the concept. And so, anything we can do to help advance these extension projects, it's something that we've spent a fair amount of time and resources on internally.
Let's wait till the final slide. But you'll be first dibs after that.
The next couple of slides are about the Alaska LNG project. In the interest of time, I'm going to kind of give you the takeaway from each one of these slides. And if there are questions, certainly feel free to ask them. All I can tell you about this is the railroad has a lot of experience in moving pipe. We did it during TAPS. We're going to be able to do it again. We're doing it right now through moving pipe in through from our Seward dock, over 30 ships over the last couple of years. And we're going to be able to do it again for LNG. We have spent a significant amount of time working with the developer, Glenn Farne, at this point as to how the logistics on all of this can work. I can take you through in some level of detail, but the fact of the matter is we've got a plan and that is going to work to be able to support what needs to come into Alaska and get it to the right place to make the Alaska LNG project work. We have part of that is, as Megan mentioned, we have capital ourselves that we're ready to deploy when the actual commitment for the project comes. When Glenn Farne issues FID, we will be looking at deploying roughly $10 million worth of capital to upgrade and increase a couple of spurs and also some terminal improvements. That is exclusive of then the operating type of activities that we will have to have, where we're going to need more locomotives and more flat cars to be able to meet that operating plan that I was referring to. Now, if that seems light to you, that is because we have spent an inordinate amount of effort over the past decades in preparing the Alaska Railroad for such an event as the Alaska LNG project. And you just see the things up here. I'm not going to read these to you, but the investments we have made that have just been ongoing in course of business to continue to harden this railroad and make it ready for a project such as Alaska LNG. So, tell them what you're going to tell them it, and then tell them it again. Here it is on slide 27. We can do this. It's as simple as that. The one part that I do want to spend a moment on is relates to, as well as being the an operating entity that can move the pipe and get it to where Glenn Farne needs it to be able to construct this in a safe, efficient manner. We are also have the ability to provide services related to the financing of this. This is something that actually would take a little bit of time to go through, so I won't go too much through the history of it. But suffice to say, back before the railroad was being transferred to the state, then Senator Stevens and the Congressional Alaska delegation wanted to give it every opportunity to make sure it was going to be successful. And so it included in the Transfer Act, what we call ARTA, the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act, a provision giving the railroad really unprecedented powers related to the ability to issue tax-exempt debt. Those powers were then actually affirmed in the Tax Reform Act of 1986, which for accountants is the one that just basically took out all the fun out of things, all right? It really stripped out a whole lot of things. This remained, which is important. That language lay dormant until the 2002 timeframe under the Knowles administration, when it was clear that there was another gas line initiative out there, and the railroad, the ability to use these tax-exempt powers was brought to light. The legislature at the time provided a legislative authorization to the railroad, because remember, if we need to issue bonds, or if we want to issue bonds, we need legislative authorization for that. The legislature in 2003 provided a $17 billion authorization to the Alaska Railroad. That project, of course, did not continue on, and so therefore that authorization was never used. It was very clear at the time that before that authorization could be used, even though the language is very clear as to what the railroad's powers and abilities are, the market would require the IRS to opine as to whether or not, through a revenue ruling, that that basically it says what it says here. No such opinion was sought, given that no project came close. As Glen Farn has proceeded here, last June, the railroad requested such an opinion from the Treasury Department through the Internal Revenue Service. January 15th of this year, we received a positive response to that request, where the Alaska Railroad does have the ability, and was specifically, the revenue ruling specifically grants the Alaska Railroad this authority to issue tax-exempt debt in support not only of the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, but also related facilities to that project. So what this effectively means is that we can issue bonds, still subject, the legislature would have to approve, authorize such bonds, but can issue these bonds without regard to what they call private activity restrictions that are in the tax code. The modeling hasn't been complete for the updated version of this, but in 2003, the modeling showed a savings of roughly $1 billion on a $17 billion project. Now, many things have changed over there, so I mean, you can't just extrapolate that going forward. But the point on it is this could be a very powerful tool to assist in moving this project forward with its financing. The Alaska Railroad would be a conduit issuer, so. And what that effectively means is there would be no liability to the Alaska Railroad nor to the state of Alaska. In other words, no resources or assets or revenue streams would be pledged for the repayment of these bonds, and there is no recourse back to either one of those two entities. And that's driven by state statute. It's driven by the documents that would be issued for in marketing the bonds, and also just the controlling agreements out there. Would still need legislative authorization. Glen Farn is taking all of this under advisement and will be reaching out to us if they are interested in proceeding. It is an outstanding opportunity. It's a tool that really is a very powerful one for this project. And that, with 3 minutes and 5 seconds, concludes the Alaska Railroad's short overview of what's going on with us.
Thank you both. Some time for some questions. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I recognize that, you know, cutting into my own time, but I don't know if we're going to have an opportunity to ask these questions again, and so I have to take the chance here. When we've talked about on one of the slides that you mentioned, I think it was slide 22 or 23, but the ongoing, rail extensions, that it's an ongoing engagement, and I think that you said it was an ongoing priority. Mm-hmm. This is something that I didn't know until I got into this position now, is that it's my understanding that the Alaska Railroad hasn't essentially laid a mile of track since it became the state thing. Now, I'm not advocating that you just start laying track out willy-nilly. So if this is a priority, you say it's a priority and it hasn't happened, is it because the market is not demanding it? Or are there places which we can, I'm sure that Kevin's, I'm teeing Kevin up, but are there places where the market is asking for it and you guys aren't doing it? Does that make sense, the question I'm asking?
Through the chair, the question does make sense.
Okay.
And the answer is we would like very much to expand the rail. But again, back to our model, this is, as you say, as your point, you can't lay this using the term willy-nilly. We can't do it without a business case. And until there is a solidified business case, that is not something that we are just literally physically capable of doing, to putting the financing together for something like that. We've been working very hard on developing that business case and looking at other sources of income, which gets us back to the whole concept of the Crissy Grant out there. We note with interest that the state legislature has not been forthcoming with requests from the Mat-Su Borough to put forth match monies related to that, in the case of Port McKenzie, as an example. We've always been very clear, and I really want to be clear about this, we want to do this, but we cannot do this alone.
Mm-hmm. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. The bond thing is, I'm actually not going to talk about Port McKenzie specifically. I probably have talked about that enough in my life. Oh, please, Miss Alaska Marine Highway
System. We have nicknames now.
Yeah, that's right. But the bonding thing is kind of interesting to me, so I'm wondering if Macquarie and Martinez bond with AGDC through you, it's a carry-through bond or whatever it's called. Can that be considered the non-federal match? In other words, if they wanted to bond for $58 million to meet the Crissy Grant, could they do it through you, through a bond, and then that would be the non-federal match?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, that would work, assuming you have identified the source of repayment for the bond.
Follow-up? Yeah, so I get that. I mean, the whole idea of an anchor tenant, I understand that, but I think that the Mat-Su Borough has identified that they would be the anchor tenant, and then they would sort of collate all the other smaller people that wouldn't be able to pay it all off, whether it be Crowley or Terra Energy or Nova Minerals or all of those that have said, if you build the railroad, we will definitely come and do business. We're kind of in a chicken and egg situation here. You know, if you build it, they will come. Well, I'm not going to build it until they come. Every single person we've talked to, and you have as well, is like, well, yeah, we'll give you a memo of understanding or letter of intent or whatever, but we're not really going to commit to buying or building or leasing in Port McKenzie until the railroad is there. So it is a struggle. It's no different than any other infrastructure in Alaska, except it's a private corporation. If we want to build a road to somewhere, because whether Ambler Road or West of Sitna Access, because we know there's minerals up there, we don't tell the mines or the mining district, hey, you need to start mining first and then we'll build your road. You have to have the infrastructure. So we're kind of trapped here with the idea that we have to have an anchor tenant. I get it. I understand it. And you've got a business to run and a railroad to protect. I totally understand that. But we have a state to build out. And I want the railroad to be part of it. You have to be. And so that's sort of an editorializing position here. But sorry, you do it all the time. Stop.
I appreciate it, Representative McCabe. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Eichheit. So back to the bonding issue. And you have the ability to help create this bond, but yet none of the liability of it. So in order to, so if Glen Farne decides they want to do that, do they have to financially meet a certain criteria before those bonds can go forward? And is FID, would FID be required in advance as well?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, certainly there would need to be, before any bonds could be issued, they would have to get a rating, and the rating would effectively demonstrate the ability to the borrower, in this case Glen Farne or some one of their subsidiaries, to repay those bonds. And so the only way that they would be able to show that they have the ability to repay those bonds certainly would be that they were showing that they were moving forward with the project and that they had for whatever manner they would be able to demonstrate that there is adequate sources of repayment.
Thank you.
Okay, see no further questions from the committee. I'd like to thank you, Mr. O'Leary and Ms. Clemens from the Alaska Railroad. Fascinating conversation. Obviously, people are very interested in the railroad. So with that, we're going to take a brief at ease to switch presentations for our next agenda item. At ease. House Transportation is back on the record at 2:35 p.m. We're going to move now to House Joint Resolution 42. And I want to recognize Representative Garrett Nelson. He is here in front of us. Representative Nelson, please introduce yourself for the record and your staff, if you have any staff presenting, and begin your presentation. And just so you know, Representative Nelson has asked that he go over the resolution, and he'd like to get to his invited testimony and then take questions when we're through that process. Go ahead, Representative
Nelson. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Okay, I'm just making sure they were both still here. Representative Garrett Nelson, District 29, Sutton, go District 29. And also I have my staff here, Shonda Erickson and Catherine Covey. They've been, instrumental in helping getting all this through. So in introducing this resolution today, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I would like to introduce House Joint Resolution number 42. It's a resolution supporting the Northern Continental Corridor concept. And essentially this concept and project, it looks to connect Alaska to the Lower 48, which is also known as America or down there, which is a new thing for me when I came up here, but connecting it by rail. So this idea has been proposed in the past, and much of the work has been done, which others can speak better than I, but we're in a unique position right now at this specific time to make it a reality. DOD funding, or Department of War funding, has increased to $1.5 trillion. And to put that into context, Russia's entire GDP is estimated at $2.5 trillion. So the investment that the federal government is making in national defense is literally unprecedented in the modern age. And Alaska plays a huge role in that defense, specifically in the Arctic region, but more importantly, in our continental missile defense. The logistics of moving military supplies by rail is already well established in the Lower 48 through StrackNet, or the Strategic Rail Corridor Network. This project would allow Alaska to recognize the same benefits of consistent low-cost freight transfers. I recognize that this project has the greatest chance of being completed through federal funding, but also acknowledge that this is a specific, unique focus that we have the opportunity to capitalize on. So I hope that we can support this resolution and the Northern Continental Corridor now. This resolution will demonstrate that at this specific time that we realize the work that has been done in the past and we can capitalize on it. Rail connection will make American defense, our Alaskan economy, and the daily life of Alaskan citizens more affordable and resilient. So I would like to introduce, I believe on the line we have Kevin Thompson and Greg Madalena of E4M, who have done a lot of this work, and you guys have, I believe, the two-page printout, and there's also another report, which I've talked with your offices about, we can get you. And also Hillary Palmer from Dewberry to give more specifics on this and the specific approach to the rail connection, and then also, if there are any specific rail connection questions, we have the railroad people here as well. So, yes, sir.
Yes. Thank you for that introduction. We're moved to the invited testimony per your request. First up, we have Kevin Thompson. Mr. Thompson, please put yourself on the record and begin your remarks.
Thank you, Co-Chair and members of the committee. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, for the record, my name is Kevin Thompson. I am a principal partner and co-owner of E4M.
Please proceed.
So, a little bit of my background. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, please proceed.
A little of my background. I'm a United States Army veteran. I was injured in combat in Iraq in 2004. After leaving the military, I became a helicopter pilot and a fixed-wing pilot, and later started and sold several businesses before relocating my wife and kids back to Alaska. Following a severe case of COVID that ended my aviation career, I founded E4M, an engineering and manufacturing firm focused on strategic infrastructure and industrial development. E4M authored the Northern Continental Corridor, or NCC, report before the committee today. The report identifies the strategic importance of developing a redundant shipping capability connecting Alaska to the Northern Transportation Network. This in and of itself as a concept isn't new. We in Alaska have heard this over and over again. We just have a different approach here. What our approach is a EPCM framework. That's engineering, procurement, construction, and management. This structure focuses on a disciplined project development and the de-risking necessary to determine real viability. The key element of this process is engagement with the Department of Defense to evaluate strategic value and long-term logistic resilience. Next, you'll hear from our chief engineer, Greg Madalena, who's a friend and a business partner, and I will be available for questions at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Madalena, if you can put yourself on the record and begin your testimony, please proceed.
Wonderful. Can you hear me?
Affirmative.
For the record, I am Greg Madalena with E4M LLC.
Yes.
For the co-chair and committee, I'm a 25-year veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard and a Coast Guard Academy graduate, where I served in that 25 years as a civil and facilities engineer, designing, planning, and maintaining runways, piers, and Coast Guard facilities nationwide. I spent 4 years in Juneau as a Coast Guard's Alaskan real estate agent, as well as a facility planner as well. And following retirement, my family and I chose to move back to Alaska over the six other states that I'd lived in over my 25-year career. So Kevin and I launched the Northern Continental Corridor project as truly just a big, audacious goal. We wanted to bring industry, economy, and jobs to Alaska. And we started thinking if this was a complete long shot, but then we dug in and we looked at the numbers and we found that the cost is huge, but the benefits to Alaska and to the nation are even better, as Representative Nelson somewhat highlighted earlier. The financing and engineering of this corridor are feasible and reasonable. So what this brings to us, this rail corridor will open Alaska. It will open it to mineral extraction. It has a direct nexus to moving military hardware, as Representative Nelson had mentioned. It opens up timber industry. It's going to reduce the cost of living for Alaskans, and the overall economic output of this rail corridor will be 420,000 job years of impact. Since Kevin and I drafted this study, in the last 3 months, we've gained both routing through roughly 80% of the 1,200 plus mile corridor. We've developed critical partners with Canada, and those partners are pushing the same effort from the other side of the border. And separately, we gained validation of some of our key financial costing models that we put into this report. And I mean, spot on within 1 to 2% of our costing. So that validation is huge. I hope to have support from the committee for this effort, and I look forward to any of the questions that come about later here. Thank you very much. I'll pass it on to Hillary Palmer with Dewberry, please.
Thank you, Mr. Madalena. Hillary Palmer, please put yourself on your record and your affiliation, and please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Eichheid and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Hillary Palmer. I'm a geospatial and infrastructure program manager representing Dewberry Engineers. Dewberry is headquartered in the D.C. area, but I'm based out here in the Matsuba Valley, where I have lived for the past 36 years. I've spent my entire career in Alaska studying how this state moves, mapping out where its vulnerabilities are, and brainstorming what it would take to make my home state more resilient. And I'm speaking today in support of the Northern Continental Corridor Rail Project, which you've just heard about. I'd like to explain my perspective of why I feel this is the right project and at the right moment for Alaska. In 2023, I led a baseline supply chain assessment for FEMA that identified how Alaska gets its food, water, fuel, and electric power. The findings were stark and probably in line with what you all already know, as well as those Alaskans who are paying attention, right? We are heavily dependent upon the Port of Alaska as a critical node, and a single highway corridor, the Alaska Highway. There is essentially no redundancy in either our road or marine systems. The Northern Continental Corridor, or NCC, addresses this directly. A freight rail line connecting the Alaska Railroad through Canada to the rest of North America would give Alaska an inland freight route it has never had. It's not a minor infrastructure upgrade. It's a complete transformation of how our state connects to the rest of the continent. Alaska, it's home to some of the most critical defense infrastructure in the country. Missile defense systems, long-range radar, early warning assets, and major air mobility hubs. And currently, all of their heavy equipment and supplies enter Alaska by marine cargo or the Alcan. Both are single points of failure. The NCC would provide a major heavy haul ground logistics route, the kind of redundancy that NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM have long identified as a gap in our Arctic defense posture. It aligns with the strategic priorities reflected in executive orders and with the current federal focus on Arctic mobility and homeland defense. The presidential permit for this corridor was granted in September of 2020, and it expires in 2030. The policy environment, the defense priorities, the energy resource development, and the critical mineral strategy are aligned right now in ways that they have never been before. But that window will not stay open indefinitely. In closing, I'd like to just say that I've spent my career mapping Alaska's infrastructure and documenting its vulnerabilities. The Northern Continental Corridor is the most credible opportunity I've ever seen that could actually fix them. I urge this committee to please pass the resolution. Thank you for your time. We are happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. And so this would be appropriate time for questions for the sponsor, invited testimony, or Alaska Railroad. They are here in the room. So are there any questions from members of the committee?
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Eichheit. I have a couple questions. So I keep looking at this map. Would the state of Alaska, through grants or however, be obligated to build the whole railroad all the way down to Alberta?
I'm pulling the map up. Excuse me.
No worries.
So are you talking about through, like, the Yukon territories?
Right.
And, Kevin, I'm going to turn that over to you. Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I can take that.
Yeah,
I can take that one.
Mr. Thompson, just
sorry.
Mr. Thompson, just identify yourself for the record before you answer that question. Through the chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. So, through the chair, to Representative Stutes, Kevin Thompson, E4M. To answer your question, no. So the initial assessment that we wrote identified the Department of Defense, or Department of War, as it were, to come in for the initial validation. So that would de-risk the project and open it to private capital stacks. This would allow us to then take a more complete plan out to the different capital stacks that are available in the market and have it privately funded along those routes within partnership with the Alaska Railroad.
Thank you. I have a follow-up if I might. Thank you, through the chair.
Yes.
Who do you anticipate sending this resolution to?
So, through the chair, this resolution would be sent to the Department of Defense and is currently gaining traction. After it passes, it will receive very favorable view from the Department of War. So, the main route would be the Alaska delegation and then the Department of War.
One more follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, through the chair. How about Canada?
So through the chair, I'm glad you brought that up. We have an amazing partner on the Canadian side that is working just as hard as we are. We meet with them weekly to do status updates. They are critical partners, and we have a great working relationship with them.
Which, if I might...
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, which would then make me presume that they're excited about having this as we would be?
Through the chair, affirmative. Yes, they would. They are extremely excited to be able to have this kind of a... infrastructure power horse working on their economy as well.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, just to address a couple of those points, the resolution at the end says who it'll be sent to as far as the United States is concerned. We can't dictate what Canadian policy is, but I will say that we have been having, or I have been having, weekly conversations with members of, you know, Alberta political, you know, or people who are in elected office in Alberta. And also, they were up here a few weeks ago, and we talked specifically about the project. So I don't know if that answers or adds to that question, but as far as United States policy, it says who it will be sent to, demonstrate our support for it. And then the Canadian partners, that's why, one, is that it has to be a federal project. It's not something we can bootstrap on our own from the state's level.
Okay. Representative McCabe?
Yeah, thanks, Co-Chair Eichheit. So, yeah, there's several different venues. Are you dealing with MLA Getson?
No.
So there's a friend of mine that's a minister of economic corridors. He's the government whip, or the past government whip, in Alberta. So I sent the resolution.
What's his first name?
Shane.
Yes.
Yeah, I know we're talking good. About. Yeah, so he's very interested in it. I told him we hadn't passed it yet, but we were working on it. And he's fairly high up in the in the government, the minister of, I think I said that already, economic corridors, which includes rail. And part of what they do in Canada, when they run their rail through the First Nations areas, they become partners. And their First Nations are very interested in that because not only does it bring rail through, but it brings broadband, electrical, gas, all the things. And so that's kind of the way they do it. I can imagine we could possibly do that. I mean, I'd love to have another part of the power grid come from Canada, from like Whitehorse area or something, mm-hmm. right? That would bring us some power resilience. So anyways, I have passed that along and talked to them. So there are a number of players in Canada that are pretty interested. So
thank you for that context. Co-Chair Carey.
Thank you, through the co-chair. So this resolution is really focused on the Department of War now mm-hmm. and
yeah.
sending it to them. And we've done basically the same resolution a few times now, but we've said Northern Rail Extension as opposed to Northern Continental Corridor. And I think we've focused more on the transportation side of it than the defense side of it. So why approach the resolution this way this time?
Representative Nelson.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Through the co-chair, to the co-chair, that's where the money is.
Yeah.
And the reality is that I'm more concerned with, you know, toilet paper and eggs at this point. But once it's built, then all of those things and all the benefits that we all recognize are going to come through this, that they will be provided. And the reality is that this is where the money is right now. And it's a unique opportunity where Department of Defense or Department of War, the funding is just unprecedented. And also, as we're looking at the expansion that's happening in Coast Guard in Alaska and through Missile Defense that the President has been talking about many, many times, this is a priority, as Ms. Palmer was saying, that it aligns with the federal priorities, and it's just a unique opportunity where the stars are aligned.
Okay, and just as a
follow-up.
Through the co-chair, I would just echo that I agree that the most important benefits from doing this extension, which I wholeheartedly support, is more for Alaska resident infrastructure and for the Yukon, too. That's why I... Mm-hmm. Could see this getting a lot of support in the Yukon and Alberta. So I'm wondering how you would feel about just even having one whereas clause that mentions... I'm laughing, too, because I don't really want to amend your resolution necessarily. But, you know, food security is such a huge benefit, and other infrastructure security is such a huge benefit. And I know it's going to the Department of War now. Maybe we have to change the title anyways. But I just wonder if we should mention those benefits in addition.
Co-chair, Representative Nelson. Promotion.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. Through the co-chair, to the co-chair. it's not a promotion. I absolutely agree with you that those are my main concerns as well, are like food security and agriculture. And I'm open to something like that. It just keeps it cleaner here. And I will say that there are, you know, legislative bodies in Lower 48 that are working on the same thing, on this same project, that are using different language. And so depending on the different priorities of the particular state and how they think it will be most effective to get it through their legislatures, they're using different language. But I wholeheartedly agree. And I struggled with that, to be honest with you, on wanting to add some language that would talk about that. But the reality is that that's where the money is. And so it's kind of a moot point in my mind, just to be honest with you. That's it.
I would agree, Rep. Nelson, but you might see that amendment come forward just for internal.
That's fine, yeah.
But vote for it. Who cares?
Right.
Are there?
I'm in agreement.
Are there further questions for the sponsor, the invited testimony, or the Alaska Railroad while they're here?
That's not true.
then I would just like to say that, Representative Nelson, I'm really glad you brought this joint resolution forward. It's forward-thinking, if I may. And I think, what's the saying, strike while the iron's hot? And
exactly.
The iron seems to be hot, and this seems to be a really well-thought-out proposal and good timing at that. Okay, I would like to thank Representative Nelson for his presentation. I'd like to thank Kevin Thompson, Hillary Palmer, Greg Maddalena for their invited testimony, the railroad for being here. So I guess we will excuse you back to your regular seat, unless you'd like to make any final comments, Representative Nelson. Okay. We are going to set an amendment deadline for HJR 28 for this Friday, March 13th, Friday the 13th at 5 p.m. Please work with the co-chair offices if you have any amendments or want to suggest some. That is our final agenda item for today. Our next House Transportation Committee meeting will be this Thursday, March 12th at 1 p.m. in room 124. With no further business, this meeting of the House Transportation Committee is adjourned at, look at that, 2:59 p.m.